Friends, please pray with me. Father in the heavens, I ask you, with my brothers and sisters here, approaching you as disciples of Yahshua, please grant that every right word bear fruit, every ill-conceived thought in my preparation and my words cause all of that stuff to evaporate with no effect. I ask, Father, that everybody here walk away with a takeaway, something that will empower them on this topic of the 10th commandment, and also something to empower them for the day of self-affliction and self-examination tomorrow. And Yahshua Messiah always. Amen. Hallelujah. Brothers and sisters, I'm Michael Bannock from Fulton, Missouri. Every blessing of Yahshua be yours. The title of my remarks today is The 10th Commandment of 10, subtitled, Society is Doomed. When you really understand this commandment, really wrap your head around it, weave it into the fabric of your soul, and then look around the landscape of the society we're in. We are doomed. This sin is everywhere. It's in the culture. It's at the underpinning of our economy. Some people celebrate it. I just wonder sometimes, how can this society be saved? America in particular. You know, back in old England, they overthrew slavery through religious activism and political activism. In this country, it took a civil war. You know, this country has a unique grip on this sin. If you fall asleep between now and the conclusion, let me just tell you that society is doomed, and the best strategy I can think of is to unplug, disengage, get out. Today is Sabbath, September 30th, 2017, and this is the day before atonement. And like all the others, this was a very hard commandment to prepare notes for. Here we'll be covering the command itself, the meaning of key words in the command. We'll look at some case studies, have some strategies going forward. The command is found in Exodus 20, verse 17. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's house, thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife, nor his manservant, nor his maidservant, nor his ox, nor his donkey, nor anything that is thy neighbor's. Now, because it starts with the words thou shalt not, it is considered, quote, a negative command. That doesn't mean it's a bad command, it just means it's identifying a no-fly zone for you. The key word there, the word for covet, Strong's Hebrew number 2530, chamad. It's a primitive root. Now, I use this occasion to show you how to use your Strong's Concordance. The definition in the lexicon there is a primitive root, and it literally means to delight in. And then it gives you all the translations of that word in alphabetical order. And I'm going to read them off to you. But you know, the first one is beauty, then the next one is greatly beloved. Well, according to his sorting rules, this is the next one alphabetically. The key word will be beloved, and then the word greatly is just an adjective. But if you look closely, these are in alphabetical order. Beauty, beloved, or greatly beloved. Covet, delectable thing. Delight, desire, goodly, lust, either be pleasant or pleasant thing, precious or precious thing. The key concept seems to be strong desirability, and it looks like it's translated as both a noun. The root can be projected into a noun or a verb. Strong desirability. Now, this basic command, the word in this basic command, is connected to well-known passages in Scripture. If I was kind of surprised when I did a search with my eSword tool, that the Strong number turns up in a lot of famous passages. So I'm going to skip through several of these with you. In Genesis 2:9, it talks about the foods that we're allowed to eat in the garden. And out of the ground made Yahweh Elohim to grow every tree that is pleasant. Emphasis on the word pleasant. That's the same Hebrew word, 2530, chamod. Every tree that is pleasant to the site and good for food. Let's pause there. Then it adds, the tree of life also in the midst of the garden and the tree of knowledge of good and evil. You jump ahead to Genesis 3:6 and you find out this word for coveting is used as an adjective for the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And when the woman saw that the tree was good for food, Genesis 3:6, and that it was pleasant to the eyes and a tree to be desired. The word desired there is chamad, again, that Hebrew word for covet. To make one wise, she took of the fruit thereof and did eat and gave also unto her husband with her, and he did eat. So they desired this thing. Now, what makes it a violation of the Ten Commandments is that this is something Yahweh said, no, this, you don't do that. That was his property. He says, you don't do that. And they desire to be like him. The whole section of my notes is not here because I decided not to develop that. But one of the great examples of coveting is to covet Yahweh's station, Yahweh's glory, Yahweh's position. This appears to be Satan's problem. But I see it with these knucklehead preachers on the TV. They're claiming Yahweh's glory for a perverted message. It bothers me a great deal. Now, there's many forms of coveting. This is the very illegal coveting, unlawful desire. And this is the first one we know of. But there's more. In that passage where Rebekah was helping her son Jacob swindle the inheritance from Isaac, Genesis 27:15, and Rebekah took goodly raiment of her eldest son Esau, which were with her in the house, and put them upon Jacob, her younger son. By the way, I just noticed here that they were living in a house at that time. That's interesting. So it was goodly raiment. The goodly is the word chabot. I want to get it right. Chamad, meaning to be, you know, strongly desirable. She grabbed that best stuff and gave it to her son Jacob. Said, put this on. He'll give you the blessing. Deuteronomy 7:25. The graven images of their Elohim shall you burn with fire. Thou shalt not desire the silver or gold that is on them. The word desire is the same word for covet. That's a very hard command to follow. I can imagine an Israelite looking at some of these golden statues and saying, maybe I can melt it down and get some coin out of this. I says, no, you're going to completely destroy them. Yeah, but I could use it for good. I could use it for a good thing. No. Yahweh says, no, completely destroy them. And wouldn't you believe in the very next book of the Bible, Joshua chapter 7:21, in the course of a military conquest, one of them grabbed some idols and other things in violation of what I just read to you. And the perpetrator of this testified as follows. When I saw among the spoils a goodly Babylonish garment and 200 shekels of silver and a wedge of gold of 50 shekels weight, then I coveted them. The word coveted there is the same word we're chasing through the scriptures now. And he continues, and I took them, and behold, they are hid in the earth in the midst of my tent, and the silver under it. Well, Yahweh wasn't tricked. The whole camp was plagued because of his banana head. And they had to find this guy. This guy was punished severely. I think he was stoned. I think this is, well, you can verify it for yourself. But I think after he was stoned, he was also burned. But isn't it like that? One guy can ruin it for everybody. Here's a positive one in Psalm 19. Boy, who doesn't love Psalm 19? It's talking about Yahweh's statutes, commandments, judgments, and laws. In Psalm 19, verse 10, it says, more to be desired are they, Yahweh's words, than gold, yea, than much fine gold, sweeter also than honey and the honeycomb. So this is a tip-off that coveting or desiring is not bad. It's, the issue is, what is it that you desire? What is it that you're coveting? Is it allowed? Psalm 68:16 gives us an insight into Yahweh's heart. It's talking about Jerusalem. In verse 16, it says, "Why leap ye, ye high hills? This is the hill which Elohim desireth to dwell in. Yea, Yahweh will dwell in it forever." Here we get a glimpse of Yahweh's heart. He desires to have Jerusalem as his headquarters here on the earth. Now here's one about Isaiah 53, from Isaiah 53. It's about Yahshua. You know, there's every now and then, you know, people are trafficking in pictures and images of Yahshua. I wonder how many of you have in your possessions images of Yahshua that show him an ugly man. He was ugly. And wouldn't you know it, leave it to man in his perverted mind. He says, well, let's make him pretty. Let's make him look like a European. Let's give him a pretty nose and everything. He looks like the man of destiny in those pictures, but he was ugly. "For he shall grow up before him as a tender plant and as a root out of dry ground. He hath no form nor comeliness, and when we shall see him, there is no beauty that we should underline, desire him, underscore, desire him." He's not a desirable guy. You'd look at him from a distance and you'd kind of want to shy away. One thing that the people in this world who are maimed and handicapped really bad, and one of the things they deal with is people looking away from them. They don't like people staring at them. They don't want people avoiding them. They want to be treated just normal, actually. It's evident from the scriptures that the women trusted Yahshua. You can see where they financed his ministry with their own earnings. So he won their trust. And he won people over by his character and by his word. But he was not attractive, you know, in a desirable kind of way. Like a movie star. Interestingly, we find Daniel is very much beloved of Yahweh. I didn't expect this in the course of my research. Daniel 9:23. "At the beginning of thy supplications," this is an angel talking to Daniel, "the commandment came forth, and I came to show thee, for thou art greatly beloved." Emphasis, beloved, the word for covet. "Therefore, understand the matter and consider the vision." Yahweh really desires fellowship with Daniel. Yahweh's really drawn to Daniel. Daniel 10, the next chapter, it's interesting how these... By the way, this is the kind of stuff the rabbis jump all over. There'll be three passages from Daniel. This is the second one. He says, "I ate no pleasant bread, neither came flesh nor wine in my mouth, neither did I anoint myself at all till three whole weeks were fulfilled." Now, some Bible students will call this a fast from pleasant-tasting foods. The word fast is not in there, and I admit that. But I once did a fast like this myself. I ate no pleasant bread. Okay, that's the word for covet there. Pleasant. I once did a fast from pleasant-tasting food for 3 days. I'm telling you, it's horrible. It is horrible. Try to imagine 3 days where all you have is white bread, grits, oatmeal, mashed potatoes, blah, just all that white stuff. It was horrible. Now, I got an answer to my prayers at the end of the 3 days. Interesting, very early in the fast, I got a false answer. After 3 days, I got the right answer. I don't know how this guy managed to go on like this for 3 weeks. But it's interesting, he's beloved, chamod, but he ate no chamod bread. And then a little later in chapter 10, this angel says to him, "O Daniel, a man greatly chamod, a great beloved, desired." Yahweh really loved Daniel. "Understand the words that I speak unto thee, and stand upright, for unto thee am I now sent. And when he had spoken this word unto me, I stood trembling." Finally, the word covet shows up in Micah 2, verse 2. This verse is going to come back again later. "And they covet fields," it says, "and take them by violence and houses and take them away, so they oppress a man and his house, even a man and his heritage." Boy, this is a big problem, especially in this country. Oh, my gosh. They covet fields, take them by violence. Our covet-based society is doomed. I have to avoid the temptation to grandstand here. I really just want you all to stop sinning. That's really what I want. Now, this thing here, this image I have, for the benefit of those who are just listening through audio outreach, this is an image I got from the internet from an advertising agency. I wasn't on their page. I did a search, and I don't see a copyright anywhere with it, but I just in case, I put the web link there, www.thebluediamondgallery.com/highlighted/images/advertising.jpg. And what this advertising company doing is they're telling you this is what advertising is. This is what it is. Advertising is. And what they've done is they've given you like a, the image covers like a portion of a little narrative. And I'm just going to highlight certain words. Drive consumer. Their objective in Madison Avenue is to drive you. I don't like people telling me what to desire. I don't like people manipulating me. Maybe you like it. Maybe you like being tricked. Maybe you want to get to the end of your life and look at that pile of junk in your garage and that pile of junk in your attic and say, hey, this wasn't worth it. Maybe you want that experience. You know, me, I'm diligently trying to divest myself of the junk. My biggest problem is other people's junk winding up in my garage. Okay, that's my problem. I don't know anybody who on their deathbed says, oh, if only I had accumulated more junk. I don't know anybody who says that. And what you really have are these sad, downbeat moving exercises where you're just hustling junk back and forth. I remember one brother in the faith, he had to help coordinate the disposition of an estate back out west. And he flew out there, some relative died. And oh, it took weeks. There was 3.5, no, I don't want to exaggerate. I'll cut it back just to be safe. There was 2.5 trucks, tractor trailer like trucks, 2.5 trucks filled with junk. Plus what's in the house. Chairs with 3 legs. Pictures without frames. Frames without pictures. And those curtain rods. Oh, they accumulate, don't they? Those curtain rods. Everybody's got curtain rods. And some of them are bent. And you know very well you can't use them. More junk, junk, junk. There's a little tip for you. When you're moving and you think you're half done, you're only 20% done. It's an optical illusion. I'm not kidding you. But advertising wants you to go into increased consumption. Look at that second part I highlighted there. Increased consumption. They want you to consume, acquire. Lots of people. Two comedians, Bill Cosby and who's that other guy? The hippy-dippy weatherman. Who's that guy? Whoever that comedian is. They both have comedy routines about that junk, that stuff. Advertising is to stir up desire in you. Now, it turns out it's not a sin to desire things, unless it's hindering you from serving Yahweh, or if you're desiring what is somebody else's. The problem is, if you can't afford all those things, and it's not Yahweh's will for you to have them, now there's conflict inside. The culture teaches us to covet, and I'm going to give you some examples of coveting. Wrong coveting. Not just mere desire, but wrong coveting. And some of these are very subtle. You're going to be challenged here. Our covet-based society is doomed, all right. Now, here's a common one. Stop. There's an image here of some people protesting in their community. It says, stop gentrification. Okay, what's that all about? I'm just curious, how many people know what gentrification is? Oh, my goodness. Oh, Steve does? Okay, a hush falls over the room. Okay, here's how it works. It's where people who are in the upper middle class or lower upper class, they identify a neighborhood that's on the downslide. You know, either it's starting to deteriorate or it's almost going to deteriorate. Now, the people living there are happy. They don't have a lot of dough, and they can afford to live there. That's like their springboard to go somewhere else. But they're happy in their little community. The prices are under control. Well, these gentrification guys, they go in and they say, oh, we'll just buy it up. we'll just buy it up. They raise the rent to force the people out, and then they renovate the buildings. And they suddenly turn it into an upper-class neighborhood, upper-class community. Okay, they're executing a classical formula that says buy low, sell high. See, I can buy up that community and, you know, I'll benefit. These people are begging anybody who will listen, don't do this. You're ripping up our little community. We're getting along. We're paying our bills. Where will we go? Now, the reason they get away with it is because it's legal. It's legal. Is that your excuse? Well, it's illegal. Two books I've read. One is The Cherokee Tragedy by Thurman Wilkins, and the other is Bury My Heart at Wounded Knee by Dee Brown. These two books cover two separate parts of the America experience. The Cherokee were a large tribe in the southeast part of the country, and the other book, Bury My Heart at Wounded Knee, covers the breaking of treaties primarily going west. But it's the same scenario every time. White settlers, people like you and me, will settle close to the Indians' territory and then encroach upon it, take things from their land, steal cattle, steal crops, and eat up their land. And so the typical scenario is they sign a treaty. They say, listen, okay, we'll draw the line here. No more encroachment. We'll draw the line, shake hands, sign treaties. Then they start the cycle over again, wash, rinse, repeat. And they just kept pushing them back and pushing them back. Often the white settlers would start and instigate like an incident. It all came down to coveting someone else's land. You know, there was plenty of land here. There was plenty of land for everybody. This whole thing could have been worked out so well. Now, those of you who know me well know that I've studied the Cherokee pretty close. There's no question in my mind those people are Hebrew. They called the Almighty Yahweh. They danced around the fire at night and said, Yo-hee-wah, Yo-hee-wah. And it took me a while to figure it out, but what they were doing was spelling the trigram. It's the three-letter form of Yahweh's name. And historical literature shows that when people wrote about Yahweh outside the Bible, I don't know what they said, but when they wrote about him, they often used the three-letter form, just like you and I would use Yah. They would use Yahu or something like that. There's other aspects of their culture, which very striking looks like either I think they're Israelites. To them, the number 7 was sacred. They had the ritualistic laws. Their calendar looks just like Leviticus 23. If these settlers were really good Bible students, they would have seen, these Cherokee are a different bunch. Maybe we should be careful how we treat them. But it doesn't matter. When you sign treaties and break them over and over again, it's really a shame and a disgrace. Let me tap the brake here. It's a little too easy these days to get into America bashing, you know. And also, I have no desire to lay these sins at your feet. So let me cover this by just saying, if you take America and compare her to other countries, you find two things. Number one, this country has committed approximately the same amount of evil as any other country, approximately. We don't have all the facts, but roughly speaking, the country has done approximately the same amount of evil. However, it looks like no country has done as much good. And that is kind of a saving grace. It seems we're always answering 911 calls for the rest of the world. We have things like the Peace Corps and foreign missions and foreign aid. We got things like that going on that are really unique to our culture. And we are the people they call when they have tough things to get done. Nevertheless, these sins are well documented. Coveting other people's land. This is one you may not, you probably won't be able to predict where I'm going with this, but on this panel here, I continue with the theme, our covet-based society is doomed. Now on the left, you see a guy holding a sign that says, tax the rich. Isn't that the solution to all our problems? Just tax the rich. Just throw their money at my problem and Everything will be fine. Now, over on the right, there's a chart. This is from the year 2013. Things probably changed a little bit since then, but the trend overall has been always the same. This is a chart of who's paying how much taxes, broken out by income grades. Okay, the people that are making $250,000 or $250,000 and above, in 2013, they submitted 2.4% of the tax returns. Those 2.4% of the tax returns created 48.9% of all the income tax going to the government. Roughly speaking, you have about 2.5% of the people paying 50% of the tax money, which raises the question, well, if you want to soak the rich, it looks like you're doing a pretty good job so far. Where will we draw the line? Again, you probably don't know where I'm going to take this, but let me just take a little detour here. On the left of the next panel, you have a talk show host named Gary Nolan. I didn't even know Gary Nolan existed until I did some channel surfing here on the local radio. He has a show I can pick up locally. Well, he went to one of the big political conventions a little over 4 years ago. And this is one of those places where they're saying, soak the rich, tax the rich. And Gary Nolan was aware of that chart to the right. He knows about all that stuff. But he got these guys to come into his news booth. He's prominent enough to have his own desk there. And every time he brought one of those tax the rich politicians to talk with him, he always made sure to ask them, I understand you think we should tax the rich more. What do you think is a fair tax rate? What do you think is a fair share? I'm not exaggerating. Every time he asked them, day after day after day, I kept tuning in. Every one of them, when that question came up, they said, oh, I got to get going now. I'm wanted on the floor of the convention. I have a commitment to see somebody. I got to go now. And nobody ever managed to say, well, what is this fair share tax rate for the rich? And the reason is once you lock that in, they know they can't move it anymore. Maybe there is some just place. Maybe there is some righteous and just place to put the tax rate for them. Maybe there is. But until someone can tell me what that is, we justify it, have a national debate, it looks like people are just looking to that as a bottomless well of cash. And I'd rather have things all sorted out. Evidently, these tax rates are not enough. Where 2.5% of the people are paying 50% of all the dough, maybe that's not enough. And whenever anybody talks about a tax cut for the rich, it never occurred to them that maybe it's maybe that tax was unfair to begin with. I'll give you an example of an unfair tax. A corporation is taxed on their profits. And if I own stock in that company, I will get those profits accrued to my account. Well, those are called capital gains. Well, should I be taxed on the capital gains? Those gains have already been taxed in the context of the corporation. And now you know what the great national debate about capital gains tax is. It's a double taxation. Here's what's really going on. People want that money for what they want to do. They want it for their pet projects. They want it to buy votes. And they see it as a means of accruing power to themselves. I know this because they've been doing this for decades, and nothing's getting better. Nothing. It's getting worse. The real problems are sin. I'd like you to think about something with me. The scriptures have notable warnings about the rich, but nowhere does scripture invite us to desire what they have. Think about that. We're warned about the rich. We've got red flags. We're told to avoid those temptations, avoid those problems. Seek the simpler life. There's nothing in the Bible that ever says, desire what they have. So let's run through some of these. It's worth it for me to go through this because we have a social environment right now that's teaching us to covet what the rich have. James 1 verse 11, for the sun is no sooner risen with a burning heat, but it withereth the grass, and the flower thereof falleth, and the grace of the fashion of it perisheth. so also shall the rich man fade away in his ways. Does that sound like something you want to get into? Matthew 19:24, and again I say unto you, it is easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter into the kingdom of Elohim. But based on the Aramaic, maybe it means a rope made of camel hair going through the eye of a needle. You know, but it's a very striking visual either way. Luke 6:24. But woe unto you that are rich, for you have received your consolation. In other words, you're already comfortable. Does that sound like something you want to get into? Hey, I want to be rich so I can have woes pronounced upon me. Luke 18:23. This is Yahshua engaging the rich young ruler. And when he heard this, the young man, he was sorrowful, for he was very rich. Yahshua told him, give your wealth to the poor, give yourself to me. Didn't want to do it. 2 Corinthians 8:9. This could have a couple of meanings, but the result is still the same for us. For you know the grace of our master Yahshua the Messiah, that though he was rich, yet for your sakes he became poor, that you through his poverty might be rich. We have reason to believe that Yahshua was prosperous when he was gainfully employed. They knew him, Yahshua the carpenter. They knew him, and I think he did excellent work. Some Bible students have wondered if some of his work is still standing there. Maybe houses he built, maybe aqueducts he worked on. I'm sure he did excellent work. He had a home. This is clear from the scriptures. And his garment was of such quality that they gambled for it while he died. It would appear if he was rich, that he gave everything away and threw himself into his ministry. The alternative explanation is that maybe he was rich in that he came from heaven and he gave up everything he had there. But it does say that he was, it still says though that through his poverty you might be rich. It's evident that he gave up a lot. Let me tap the brake here. If you're going to follow Yahweh's will, there's a lot of wealth, resources, abilities, capabilities you're going to have to forsake. To serve Yahweh, there's a lot you're going to give up. Those of you who are listening to the outreach who have not been baptized, we might as well tell you, when you enter into covenant with Yahweh, you're going to be giving up some things. Could be opportunity, wealth, relationships, comforts. Let's continue. 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 9. But they that will be rich fall into temptation and a snare, into many foolish and hurtful lusts, which drown men in destruction and perdition. People who suddenly become wealthy without earning it, by the way, they don't do too good. It seems that every story I've heard, they wind up squandering it. Oh, if I had the time. Well, anyway, instead they draw to themselves true enemies and false friends and lots of temptations. Let's look at James. We're going to close this portion with a citation from James chapter 2, verse 6. But you have despised the poor. Do not rich men oppress you and draw you before the judgment seats? You have someone comes in here and they're dressed poor. Do we treat them like they're garbage? Do we avoid people who are unattractive? I mentioned this a while ago. We tend to recoil from those who are unattractive. James is saying it's the rich men who oppress you and draw you before the judgment seats. Micah 2 verse 2 again. I cited this earlier. And they covet. There's that Hebrew word again. They covet fields and take them by violence and houses and take them away so they oppress a man and his house, even a man and his heritage. There was a Supreme Court ruling a decade or two ago that expanded upon the well-accepted principle of eminent domain. If a government needs a piece of land, they will compensate the original owner adequately. But there was a new twist. Business interests would go to the government and say, we need that land over there to make our new car dealership, a shopping plaza, whatever. So they would go through the government to exercise eminent domain, not because the government needed the land, but because the businesses sweet-talked the government and said, if you let us create that business thing over there, you get more tax revenue from the business activity. And people around the country dislike this. This is universally disliked. Well, there was one case where back home in Oaklawn, Illinois, they wanted to put up one of those donut shops. I won't mention the name. I don't think that'd be appropriate. But I wanted to put up one of those big donut shops. One guy wouldn't sell his home. And it was a beautiful old-style home. Had a lot of gingerbread designs around the gutters and the face and all that. And he just said, no, I have multiple families and ancestors live here. I love my home. I'm not going to give it up. They said, you know, if you do not relinquish your home, they're going to build this donut shop, and the drive-through window will be right below your bedroom window. You'll be tossing and turning at night, and you're going to hear two glazed donuts with coffee, you know, and this is that kind of thing all through the night. He said, no, I don't want to sell. City of Oaklawn said, this guy's going to sell. If he doesn't sell to you, we will declare eminent domain. We will seize. What they do is they condemn the property and then they just sell it to, you know, the business agency. And then the donut company said, if you're going to do eminent domain to a member of the community, we don't want the deal. And they walked out. I'm not sure I should mention the name of the company here. If you want to ask me later, I see one of the sisters prod me. Who is it, Brother Mike? Who is it? Well, you can come to the Feast of Tabernacles and I'll tell you, okay? I'll tell anybody who wants to know offline. But that company, well, it's funny thing is the donut shops, that's part of the sugar industry, and I got mixed feelings about that. But they grew 10 feet tall in my eyes. But it's very common for these businessmen to say, ooh, we want this land over here. And they just wipe through. They get it condemned. That's the eminent domain practice, get it condemned. Then they buy it up real cheap. And people have to move on. Well, that's what the rich do. Our covet-based society is doomed. You're going to see now several slides of people looting. Looting. What happens is the protections around a store go away because of an emergency, a catastrophe. For some reason, the protections are down. And people covet what is inside. It's not theirs. They want it. They lust after it. And they go grabbing it. Look at this guy. He's got a pretty nice parlay there. He's got a package of diapers, ramen noodles, breakfast cereals. Yeah, he's looking ahead. Yeah. Here's another one. This looks like a shoe store. People hoarding. No, it looks like the shoe section of a department store. Another, you can find this too. Image looting. Any search tool. Here's another one. People outside this little department store. They managed to break through that roll-up barrier. This one's really aggressive. Look at all those high-ticket items in the basket on the right. They're like slipping out, falling out. Now, the one on the left, she must have took the floor model because that giant screen is not packaged. See, they're using their head. This is one of my favorites. This looks like a changing of the guard. The guy on the left is leaving with a bicycle and a rifle, and the one on the left is going in because it's now his turn. Okay. The caption says, looting, feeding New Orleans since 2005. Just plain flat out stealing. Lusting after what is in that store. It's not theirs. By the way, I'm not going to make that point just yet. I'm going to pause here. A little bit of personal testimonies on coveting what is not mine. I have a lot of great, wonderful uncles. And one of them took mom shopping when I was a boy. Looks like mom was short of cash, and he just took us shopping. And I went with mom and the uncle. I'm going to tell you which one. Generous man, kind man. That as he walked past the produce section, he reached over and grabbed a couple of grapes and popped them in his mouth. Do you know what an effect that had on me? Through my childhood, whenever I would go shopping with mom, I'd wander over to the produce section and look at those grapes from different directions and arguing with my own heart. I was just a kid, 8, 9, 10, thinking, well, Uncle Kenny did it. I guess it's all right. Maybe I can take one. Is 3 too many? In my little mind, I was toying with this. And a day finally came when I said, no, this is wrong. I was just a little boy struggling because I saw my great uncle do it, you know? So, and he was generous in so many ways, but he helped himself to those grapes. And it polluted me for several years. I don't think Yahweh is impressed with the smallness of our crimes. How many times have I told the story of the guy at the gas pump? 2 cents over? Have you heard that one? Okay, I'll tell it again, just in case. Guy in the faith, living in the Northwest, he pumped gas in this when they started self-serve. And you paid and you went outside and you had to stop it yourself. It didn't stop automatically. He went 2 cents over what he paid inside, and he nixed it off and went on his way, running his errands. He went 2 cents over. Ran some errands. A couple of hours later, he got home, and the cops were waiting for him. And most people I tell the story to, they're just shocked. Why would the police be waiting for him for 2 cents of gas? The cops weren't there for 2 cents of gas. That afternoon, his son had been picked up for shoplifting 2 pieces of penny candy. That's very painful, but it's a sign of Yahweh's work in his life. He saw in his son the small 2 cent criminality. His son coveted the candy. He coveted that 2 cents. Oh, it's too much trouble to go in and pay it off. One of the companies I worked at when I worked through college, I flip-flopped back and forth. Work school. They called it cooperative education, where you went semester to semester from one to the other. I remember one day the coffee machine broke down, and it was dispensing free coffee. And those people just thundered a stampede into that coffee. It's like a vestibule or something, like a room, a break room. And they had a line going all the way down the hallway. It was a giant building. I don't know, Brother Javon, maybe you know the Continental Bank building, the Continental building downtown. If I took you there, you might recognize it. But this engineering company had owned and they rented giant floors. And so you could look down and see this long line of people wanting their free coffee. I wouldn't do it. Now, I forget the words I said. This was the mid-70s. I was a Sabbath keeper then. I was not sure about clean food laws, but I sure knew about those Ten Commandments. And I made it clear to everybody going by. They say, Mike, why aren't you going to get your free cup of coffee? I forget my words, but I made it clear it was not right to do that. It was wrong to go do that. And there was a Filipino guy, poor fellow. He kept trying to do his drawings and his drafting there. And he'd look up and he'd keep drawing and he'd try to ignore the people going by. And finally, when the line was down to a real short number of people, he put his pencil down. He said, I'm going. I am weak. And he went to get his coffee too. The poor girl who had to clean that mess up, the room was a mess. Not only did they steal coffee that was not theirs, but they left a pig pen mess. And the girl who was assigned to do all that, take care of the machine, she was pale from what she had witnessed. You never know when these opportunities to steal are going to come up. This commandment is so unique among the laws of the nations as it causes you to examine your motives. Well, we talked about looting. Here's another scene. Can you guess what this is? Can anybody guess what this is? This is Black Friday. Now, in this case, they're not coveting what their neighbor has, like they want to take it from, but they are coveting one another's space. They are competing for each other's space. Here's another one. Black Friday, when people trample others for cheap goods mere hours after being thankful for what they already have. That's Black Friday. By the way, I wanted to make this point. Coveting what is not yours is an equal opportunity sin. You see the racial balance here in this photo? Racial balance there? racial balance there. We can't be sure there. There's racial balance. Equal opportunity sin. Everybody's in on this. Okay? Anybody can do this. The basic activity regulated in the 10th commandment is a specific kind of desire. Desire isn't wrong. The problem is wrong desire. Side note, Buddhism. Buddhism speaks and teaches against all desire. And if you're into asceticism, it might be attractive. Oh, I'll be a Buddhist. No desire. It turns out they literally, if they get serious, they just want no desire at all. The logical endpoint is a human tree stump who can't even enjoy chocolate. You know, they have no desire. You know, I can't. Well, all desire is gone. There's nothing to work with, you know. I have no way of pleasing you if I don't know what you want. So it's a great way to avoid disappointment. You know, Yahshua ate fish after his resurrection. I could see him looking at that pile of fish and saying, it looks pretty good. I think I'll have a bite. Your desires are to be managed according to Yah's laws. All there is to it. We can actually make each other very happy by meeting each other's needs and doing things that please each other. But you have to start by forsaking desire for what other people own, their time, their energies. Let's talk about conflict, because James reveals in chapter 4 of his great letter the cause of all conflict. James chapter 4, verse 1. From whence come wars and fightings among you? Come they not hence, even of your lusts that war in your members? Every conflict, every single conflict, every one of them comes down to this. It starts with somebody wanting something, maybe a legitimate or honorable desire. Then some counterparty says, hang on there, hold on. Somebody wants something, and somebody who's affected by it says, hold on. And that's where the fighting begins. So many scenarios like this. It always comes down to somebody wanting something. So let's look more closely at James chapter 4. From whence come your wars, fightings among you? They come not hence from your lusts that war in your members. Continuing in verse 2, you lust and have not. You kill and desire to have and cannot obtain. You fight in war, yet you have not because you ask not. You ask and receive not because you ask amiss that it may consume it upon your lusts. You adulterers and adulteresses, know ye not that the friendship of the world is enmity with Elohim? Whosoever therefore will be a friend of the world is the enemy of Elohim. That's right, the vast majority of people down here are enemies of the Almighty. And they may think in their heart that they're doing pretty good, but they're not. Do you think that the scripture saith in vain, the spirit that dwelleth in us lusteth to envy? When you start desiring the wrong thing, you will feel conviction in your heart. He'll tell you. He'll tap you on the shoulder. But he giveth more grace. Wherefore he saith, Elohim resist the proud, but giveth grace unto the humble. In the face of your strongest desires, you're going to have to ask yourself, do I really deserve this? Is it really right for me to want this? Is this a legitimate desire? This commandment challenges us to question everything we want. Boy, what a tough command. This commandment surely has Yahweh's fingerprints all over it. Here's some scenarios. I told you I'm going to challenge you. Here's a scenario. A husband wants to rest, but his wife wants to talk. Now, remember, I've been single all my life, so I'm just kind of watching this from the sidelines with my popcorn and soft drink. So many times I've had couples tell me, if he would only listen to me. And the husband says, if she could just shorten and condense. And this is a constant churn. Not all of them. I know, I'm sure there's some who've gotten through this. But this is, those of you who are contemplating, you know, courtship or some of that stuff, you ought to ask yourself if you can sustain this part of the relationship adequately. Now, in the extreme case, the husband ignores his wife. He always takes for himself time he refuses to give his wife, time she rightfully claims as his spouse. You marry a gal, you are surrendering a part of your time, your soul to her, for reflection, for fellowship, for companionship. On the other extreme case is the wife that insists on nonstop interruption, nagging, constant play-by-play, robbing her husband of focus and recovery time. By the way, Elder Allen did a great job. I really liked the job you did at the wedding ceremony. I'm probably not going to say it as good as Allen, but he gave some important tips on keeping a marriage in working order. He talked about how the husband has to listen to his wife, and the wife has to let her husband sometimes be off by himself so he can come back refreshed and recommit himself to her. I wonder if we have a recording of that. That was so well said. I'm just trying to capture the essence of it. Both of these people have a legitimate desire. The conflict occurs when one of them tries to skew the balance point too far to one direction or the other. Here's another scenario. A politician wants votes. He promises the people to, quote, sock it to the rich. He provides government-paid bread and circuses. Look that up when you have a chance. Bread and circuses such as welfare and stadium subsidies, which only benefit the rich even more. Where is the improper desire here? This is coveting by proxy. You're getting somebody else to do your dirty work. You force the politician to do the dirty work of outright theft. People get addicted to what the government gives them, and they respond with uprisings when cutbacks emerge. You want a little research? Research government subsidy of sports stadiums. That's coming back to me now. In the early 90s, there was an article on this. It was a critical analysis of governments building stadiums for sporting companies. And the title of the article was, "We Was Robbed." We was robbed. How many times has a sportsman lost a game and he blamed it on the umpire or somebody and he says, "We was robbed"? Well, we were sure robbed. You know, like when he built that White Sox park in Chicago, they made it so the city was liable to any damage done to the stadium. And what happened is there was a rough community across the big highway, and every now and then a stray bullet made its way into the park and blew out the back of the scoreboard. And Brother Javon may have additional information on this, but it was really odd how when that White Sox park went up a few years later, the housing projects across the highway were all knocked down. It's because the city was on the hook for anything that happened to the stadium. We was robbed. This is an example of the rich trying to make the city happy. Hey, we'll bring in jobs. We'll make the people happy. Imagine the prestige. It's going to be real hard to cut back on things like welfare right now. And I'm hoping these sports entities stop getting these subsidies. I'd be content if we could eliminate fraud. I think we can make it all work if we eliminated the fraud. But even that's hard to do. Scenario, politician wants votes. He promises the rich to be, quote, business friendly. Result, hidden cost to the taxpayers. For example, government subsidies. I was shocked to find out how much the government subsidizes grain, milk, and tobacco. Now, I admire what the Amish have achieved in terms of discipline, community order, but a lot of them are tobacco farmers. Well, tobacco is government subsidized too. So you got a really odd situation. An odd number of days, Congress is subsidizing tobacco, and on alternate days, they're mandating warnings on the cigarette packages. Hey, this stuff is going to kill you. So they're subsidizing what's going to kill you. Corporate welfare, also corny capitalism, such as no-bid contracts. Beware, some of your favorite political figures may be doing, in the background, no-bid contracts, awarding contracts to their buddies where the cost of the service is inflated cost overruns are put on the backs of the taxpayers, or else a lot of sealed bid contracts are submitted, but for some reason, somehow they get unsealed, and one particular guy gets the award. Selective law enforcement, so many cases like this. An organic chicken farm, very low bacteria count, almost pristine, where he's butchering the chickens and preparing them. But down the road is one of those industrial chicken shops, butcher houses, pure filth, absolute filth. But they keep calling the inspectors to harass the organic guy. His bacteria count is low, but they never manage to visit that stinking factory up the road. Selective enforcement of the law. How about limitation of liability laws? This is one of the big evils of our era. I'm about to lose my mind just thinking about it. Corporate law says that if you have a corporation, you can benefit from it, but if it loses money, then you go out of business and everybody's stuck with the bill. That's our culture. That's baked in. The rich will always have that advantage. Then there's the eminent domain property law. These are politicians trying to please the rich so they can get money. And I saw one of these sayings on Facebook. The politician's job is to curry favor with the poor and the rich and promise to protect them from each other. Well, there's balance for you. They want the votes of the poor, but they need the dollars of the rich. Question, where is the improper desire in these scenarios? I don't think I have to explain. In these cases, there's characters laying claim to what's not theirs. Here's a chart from 2005 subsidies. Corn and feed subsidies are about $7 billion a year. Notice that tobacco is about a fourth of that. See, now the primaries begin in Iowa. They got to walk a tightrope. They got to tell those people in Iowa, we'll keep your grain subsidies. Yeah, we'll continue to take money from the taxpayer and, you know, help you pay your bills. After I chose this photo about slavery, an old image of slavery, it's a wood cutting. I was glad I picked it because the last one has a little baby at hand. Scenario, this is an ongoing problem. This is the human condition. The quest for cheap labor results in misery, slavery, and hazards. That little child has to be dragged around by the last slave in that line there. By the way, notice that the guy mastering them appears to be a man of color too. Boy, I hate this. Well, is this any better? Anybody can find images like this. Just type it in. Image sweatshop. After I selected this photo from several, I discovered upon closer examination they are all children. Very hazardous. It looks like they're doing some kind of metal punching. The electrical distribution, Brother Steve probably noticed real quick, the electrical distribution on the wall is terrible. Look at that. It's horrible. This one broke my heart. On the left, a girl has got a dress on that she just made for 6 cents. The consumer in America has a sign that says, I bought this for $50. Question, where did the other $49.40 go? Where did it go? Where did it go? Who are you celebrating? Whose endorsement clothes and shoes are you celebrating? It's going on worldwide. That's why I say society is doomed. Somebody has coveted their labor. I'm going to quote Abraham Lincoln from his debate with Douglas in 1858. That is the real issue. That is the issue that will continue in this country when these poor tongues of Judge Douglas and myself shall be silent. It is the eternal struggle between these two principles, right and wrong, throughout the world. They are the two principles that have stood face to face from the beginning of time. That's what I'm trying to say. This is part of the human condition. And will ever continue to struggle. The one is the common right of humanity, and the other is divine right of kings. It is the same principle in whatever shape it develops itself. It is the same spirit that says, you work and toil and earn bread, and I will eat it. no matter in what shape it comes, whether from the mouth of a king who seeks to bestride the people of his own nation and live by the fruit of their labor, or from one race of men as an apology for enslaving another race, it is the same tyrannical principle. Well, I was going to quote here from Edward William Cox on limited liability law. I see that the clock is thundering forward. You've been so patient with me. I'm going to take an extract. Limited liability is found in the opposite principle and permits a man to avail himself of acts if advantageous to him and not to be responsible for them if they should be disadvantageous, to speculate for profits without being liable for losses, to make contracts, incur debts, and commit wrongs, the law depriving the creditor, the contractor, and the injured of a remedy against the property or person of the wrongdoer. In essence, the 10th commandment forbids fulfillment of desire at the expense of others. The problem is everywhere. Whereby are given unto, this is 2 Peter 1:4, whereby are given unto us exceeding great and precious promises, that by these you might be partakers of the nature of Elohim, having escaped the corruption that is in the world through lust. I underscore that. Escape the corruption that is in the world through lust. This complicated morass of cheating, duplicity, greed, and underground economy all goes away in Yahshua's call to a freedom from sin and a simpler life. Matthew 11:28, come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavily laden, and I'll give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for I am meek and lowly in heart, and you shall find rest unto your souls, for my yoke is easy and my burden is light. Friends, one of the greatest burdens you'll carry is desiring what other people have. You're not free until you're free from that. So here's some strategies for overcoming wrong desire. Come to terms with the fact and be glad that other people have blessings you don't. You have to literally sit down and talk yourself into being glad that other people have what you don't have. I guarantee Yahweh will bless you for embracing the mind of Messiah like that. Other people will have prosperity. They'll have fame you don't have. Some will be married and you won't. Some might have a better marriage than you. They'll have careers. They'll have money you don't have. You must force yourself to be happy for them. They have things you don't have. Frankly, I feel sorry for you who are choking on things. You have my pity. If you are wallowing in things, why don't you all take this as an action item to go home and get cracking on that stuff? It's choking you up, robbing you of your fun, and yes, even ministry. Now, this is like for the ministry here. We know there's ministers listening to the outreach. If you try to fashion yourself after the churches of the world, you're going to crash and burn. Don't desire what they have. Those of you who are contemplating converting your congregation, we should warn you from our experience, observation, and research, if you embrace the original apostolic religion, you will lose half your congregation, maybe all of your congregation. Don't covet. Yahshua is telling us to come out of Babylon. Don't covet what Babylon has. I don't have time to read the whole thing, so I'm just going to tell you what happened with John here in chapter 3, starting in verse 22. His disciples from a distance said, hey, you baptized that guy from Nazareth, and now he's baptizing more than us. And John said, fine. No man can receive anything unless he gets it from Elohim. He must increase, I must decrease. I'm like the friend of the bridegroom. I'm happy for the guy. Now, I've just paraphrased what's on the screen there. But John was not jealous of Yahshua's growing ministry. He was happy for him. Contentment. I'm going to rip through some scriptures on contentment, and we'll wrap up. Contentment. You can embrace contentment. The 10th commandment won't even be an issue. But holiness with contentment is great gain, for we brought nothing into this world, and it is certain we carry nothing out. And having food and raiment, let us be there with content. That's a mitzvah. That's a commandment. You should be happy with food and clothing. Isaiah 26:3, thou wilt keep him in perfect peace, whose mind is stayed on thee, because he trusts in thee. Now, Psalm 10, verse 3, seems to sound, it's the opposite. It's the American way. For the wicked boasts of his heart's desire, and the covetous man blasphemeth, yea, abhorreth Yahweh. That's the American way. Boast, I want this, I want that. Philippians 4, verse 11. Not that I speak from want, for I have learned to be content in whatever circumstances I am. I know how to get along with humble means, and I also know how to live in prosperity. In any event, in every circumstance, I have learned the secret of being filled and going hungry, both of having abundance and suffering need. I can do all things through Messiah who strengthens me. Yahweh wants a strong people. You should be creating stresses on yourself to get ready for the time to come. Concluding remarks on the 10th commandment of 10. Desiring isn't wrong. The problem is wrong desire. The 10th commandment forbids fulfillment of desire at someone else's expense. Beware of justifications emerging in your heart. Like the following flippant remarks. He has more than he needs. Or, I must fix what is unfair. Or, oh, this is a good one. When they want to break up a marriage, she doesn't love him like I do. I didn't talk about coveting your neighbor's spouse. That should be kind of obvious. But it's amazing the justifications people have. Oh, his wife doesn't love him like I do. Or they flip it around the other way. Her husband doesn't love her like I do. You know, justification. Continuing, I need government support so I can benefit the larger whole. Another one is, I deserve this. Or the other one is, it's legal, isn't it? This sin of coveting what is not yours, it shows up in corporate law, welfare law, and national policy. The starting point for reform is personal restraint. The new covenant redirects us to contentment and a simpler life. Here's a great idea. I really beg you to take this with you for tomorrow. Use your frustrations and jealousies as an indicator of areas where Yahweh is not first in your life. You're frustrated about something? You want something? Is it like taking over your soul? Then that's a flag that Yahweh wants you to beat that down and get that under control. Thanks for listening, friends. Yahweh bless you.